Good afternoon, everyone. I would like to call to order the November 20, 2023 Desert Community Energy Board meeting. Roll call, please.
City of Palm Desert.
Present.
City of Palm Springs.
Present.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. With that, are there any modifications requested to the agenda?
Chair Middleton, no agenda modifications. Chair,
thank you. All right, thank you. And with no agenda modifications, we will move on to public comment. My understanding is we do have public comment. So, Erica, if you would.
Yes, Chair, we have Brad Anderson for public comment. We'll start clock. And board members, if you could use the mic, we do have a shared mic here for the board and staff.
Thank you, Brad Anderson. I currently live in the city of Rancho Mirage. I just wanted to speak on two topics today, number 7A. I believe that, I'm kind of against lobbying in on general and taxpayer or not taxpayer with the district the commission just paying resources to lobby. And I understand the premise of this. It should have been done at the beginning when this organization was established. I'm going to go down to item 7C. And again, I'm cautious. I understand that we're doing an excellent job with the company that you have. But the committee that selected, I don't know anything, the staff report to go into it. And was it more than one person or two people or three people? That's my only question. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments?
No change.
All right. Thank you. Board member comments. See, there are none. All right, we will move to.
I do have a few comments.
Excuse me.
Okay. And Dave, good afternoon, Chair Middleton and Vice Chair Shadows, DC Program Manager David Friedman, on behalf of Executive Director Tom Kirk. First, some good news. As you've heard, the staff of the California Transportation Commission has recommended that CBAG be awarded a $50 million grant for an infrastructure project along Indian Canyon Drive at the Wash to reduce the frequent closures from flooding and low sand. The Transportation Commission will meet Riverside on December 6th to consider the staff recommendation. Desert Community Energy is among the project's supporters with a proposed 2-mile solar shade structure along the active transportation pathway connecting Desert Hot Springs to CV Link. The solar panels will help generate 3 megawatts of energy. Staff is investigating options for the solar energy, including community solar and backup power for critical facilities in Palm Springs, if that's technically and financially feasible. And of course, we'll keep the board informed and bring any formal DC project to the board for approval. Also, as noted in your agenda, there is no board meeting next month, December. Our January meeting will be across the street in Palm Springs City Hall on the 8th, the second Monday of the month, as the third Monday is Martin Luther King Day. And finally, last but not least, the bathroom code is 459-POUND. And that concludes my remarks on behalf of Executive Director Tom Kirk.
David, thank you for that. And again, all of us throughout the Coachella Valley are just thrilled and want to compliment CVAC on the work that went into the presentation to the California Transportation Commission, and incredibly anxious to get to December 6th and 7th. With that, we will move on to consent calendar. Is there any items that to be removed from the consent calendar? Can we get a motion to approve the consent calendar? I will second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No abstentions. So consent calendar is approved. We will move on to Item 7A, presentation of statewide legislative policy efforts impacting community choice providers. And with that, Beth Vaughn, please.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Middleton, Council Member, and public. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak here today. And also, congratulations on the $50 million for CVAG. That's great news. All right. Could David, someone share the slides, perhaps? I've just got a few short slides. I'll give you a quick update.
Next slide, please.
Here we go. There you are. Thank you.
The next one. So to start, I just thought I'd give a quick update on the growth of community choice aggregators and CalCCA, a trade association which I represent. So I think many of you have seen this graphic before. We have on the left the map of California. In green are where customers are being served by community choice aggregators. Orange is where implementation plans are filed. And blue is where communities are considering CCA. And on the right-hand side is the timeline of the launch. You don't have to add up all the icons there. I can tell you that there are now 25 community choice aggregators are operational in California. The last CCA to launch there at the bottom, no, stay, if you can go back to the map, please. Yep, perfect. The last one on the bottom there, as you see in 2022, is Epic, which is the city of Palmdale. They launched about a year ago, October of 2022. We don't expect to see a lot of new community choice aggregators launching. What we're seeing now is the expansion of existing CCAs. And every year that changes. So currently, there are 213 communities in California that are served by CCAs. 34% of the counties, that's 20 out of 58 counties, have CCAs. 42% of the cities, 193 out of 462. And from an energy perspective, so that's the communities, from an energy perspective, CCAs in aggregate are responsible now for scheduling almost one third of the load into the California Independent System Operators energy market. So that's very significant. Also, as we begin to talk about Westwide conditions and coordination. I'll leave you with just pointing out at the bottom there, there's a link to the CalCCA Interactive CCA map and address lookup. So we have a new feature this fall that's been launched. More features will be on it, but at the moment you can go in there onto our website and you can go to our map, look at who your energy provider is. It could be the incumbent IOU, it could be the CCA, it could be an energy service provider. And also you can put in any address and look up to find who actually provides electricity. But again, we're gonna be providing more layers of functionality. Next slide, please. So just in terms of us, CalCCA, we're a nonprofit trade association, 501c6. We represent the community choice operators here. CalCCA was formed in 2016. I came on as executive director, the first executive director, now CEO in 2017. Our vision, mission, and strategy really haven't changed. I think that in a nutshell, we're focused on the success of community choice aggregators, specifically the viability. So for example, we ensure the jurisdictional authority of the elected boards, that it's not eroded, and also to ensure there's a level playing field, that you're not financially disadvantaged. There's a link again at the top there, which again goes to our website where you can look at our annual report. And in a lot more detail, it talks about how do we do this. But when I was talking about the growth, the CCAs now have grown so much in terms of their staff that we at CalCCA have also grown. We have our governance structure, our board, executive committee, CalCCA staff have grown. And the guts of the work, though, is done at a staff committee level. And thank you, David Friedman and others from Desert Community Energy, for participating. But we have 11 staff committees, 6 discussion groups. And when things are broken down into actual cases in the policy arena or on bills, in any given calendar year, this year we added them up and we have more than 30 separate, 30 working groups. So it can get pretty intense. It can be around a bill, a case, or it could be a topic area. Next slide, please. So David asked me to think about what are sort of the statewide legislative and policy efforts? And you know, where do we put a lot of our energy? And I tried to think of how do we group this, because we are all over the place. As I mentioned, or I might not have mentioned, we're in over 50 cases. that we lead as CalCCA at the Public Utilities Commission, the Energy Commission, the Air Resources Board, and at the Independent System Operator. So when I think about it, there are many other areas I want to caution, but these are the core policy areas. I group them into procurement, reliability, rates, and also finance, and the financial health of the load serving entities. The legislature tends to focus on the two at the top, procurement and reliability. And if you think back to 2022, the last time we had a blackout, rolling blackouts, and over the Labor Day weekend, you'll think of Assembly Bill 205 was the trailer bill focused on the extension of Diablo Canyon. It also created the Department of Water Resources Strategic Reliability Reserves. And as I mentioned, they're really focused on stopping the public safety power shutoffs and to ensure that we don't have rolling blackouts. So that's where they really focus on it. Another thing that they did do that year, remember back in the days of budget surplus, but there was a lot of investment in building and transportation and decarbonization. That's been a little ratcheted back this past year when we didn't have the big surplus that we expected. So in 2023, this past year, our efforts were very much focused in the legislature on the energy reliability trailer bill that became AB 1373. And it was a very complicated bill that involved a lot of trade-offs. If you recall, it created a central procurement authority, which I'll just note that we blocked the investor-owned utilities from becoming the central procurement entities, a role that they play on local resource adequacy. And in the case of PG&E, it's been a disaster. But so we very much pushed back on that. It also focused around compliance and enforcement around integrated resource planning. And it also includes additional RA compliance. So if reliability reserves are used, those load serving entities that aren't compliant in that month will pay the delta, the difference. Those issues are all moving from the legislature now that AB 1373 was signed into the rulemaking phase at the various agencies. And again, we'll be very involved in leading in that, those efforts. In 2024, as we head into this next year, I would say that there's a number of things we've been talking about. One is maybe a backfilling of the building and transportation decarbonization commitments of 2022 that were eroded last year. There's talk about perhaps there being a climate bond. There was unfinished business, so things that were not bills that were not signed by the government, particularly a couple of Senate bills, both designed to accelerate transmission and streamline project development. So as you probably know, and I'll speak about it in a moment, there's a lot of concern about new project delays. The other thing is that those are still hot topics. We may see some additional bills. And the other thing, and I noticed it in your legislative platform that you just adopted, the addition of affordability. That's also, we had a board retreat at the end of September. It was put at the top of our list by the CalCCA board as well. And I'll tell you, it's a difficult one to wrap your head around. I remember 3 years ago, there were several informational hearings in both the Senate and the Assembly around affordability. Everyone was concerned, but I can't name one outcome from those legislative sessions that actually addressed the issue. So it's definitely an issue of concern and top priority. Next slide, please. So in terms of procurement reliability, those two areas that I drew your attention to, because I think those are the areas the legislature is most concerned about, we do track how the CCAs are doing. And I, you know, for those of you that have followed us the last 6 years now, every November, and I have to tell you, this year I wasn't even going to do it, but the number of hits we had when we published this in the first hour, the number of people that downloaded this package of information on the 1st of November was incredible. Well, the 2nd of November. So basically what we do is we data request all of our community choice aggregators. We analyze, we look at what has been the new build. So we're really responding to Senate Bill 350, which talked about integrated resource planning. And we're looking at long-term commitments. So power purchase agreements that have been executed that have 10 plus years in the term of the contract. And the CCAs now, it comes out every year. So there's a link there. David Friedman can distribute it if you like, but there's a press release. There is a list of the 302 power purchase agreements. So again, local government, we're very transparent. It has a lot of details around the stats. That's the Excel spreadsheet you see there. There's a map that shows the location of these projects. And then the graphic showing the change over time also shows the diversity of the resource types. And I just want to say hats off, you know, shout out to Desert Community Energy. You folks have done a great job. Your stats are excellent in terms of your procurement. And what we saw overall in this year, the real difference between last year to this year, is CCA is really focused on meeting their long lead time compliance requirements in integrated resource procurement orders. So there's a focus on long duration storage, a focus on firm, clean firm, which is kind of code for geothermal, and in some cases some biomass can fit in there as well. All right, the irony of all of this is that based on the CPUC, so the California Public Utilities Commission's own midterm reliability compliance report, which came out on November 6th, only the CCAs have been procuring to meet their long lead time obligation. The CPUC's own data shows that the IOUs and the energy service providers as procuring zero. For me, this explains why the administration was so adamant that a central procurement entity be created that could procure resources other than just offshore wind. So there's sort of a connection now with us seeing the data that was actually collected last winter and spring to now understand why the administration ran the content that was in the energy reliability bill that became AB 1373. Anyways, so while this all looks great and you see the awesome stats up there and you see the $25 billion that the CCAs have committed to build and operate, and I want to highlight 5,300 megawatts that are operational. So we're moving from just procuring to these things are now built, the ribbon cuttings are done, and now we're seeing these projects up and running. It all sounds great, except we also track delays. Project delays. And what we have seen is a lot of concern about while we can execute the contracts, whether that project comes online depends on a number of factors. And the delays are really around supply chain, interconnection, and permitting. And we have some more detailed stats that we have shared with the administration on that. And what's really concerning is if we are having problems doing that, all the other load serving entities and the publicly owned utilities are also facing this project delay crunch, then that means that as a state, we're not going to reach the Senate Bill 100 goals. In order to be carbon free by 2045, that means installing more than 7 gigawatts of new resources every year. So when you ask me what are kind of the big issues that we're facing, it's not just us as CCAs, it's right across the board. This question of how are we going to do this in a very tight procurement market with prices rising. Next slide, please. And this is the last substantial slide, and I'll take questions. So the other thing, when I talk about procurement, and we're kind of focusing on energy when we talk about that, the other, and I broke the first rule of slides, don't use an acronym. So RA stands for resource adequacy. So you have energy and you have capacity. So in this case, and I don't have to tell you, it's rampant across all load serving entities, but a tight resource adequacy market equals high resource adequacy prices. I'm not going to break down all the graphics here. We could spend a whole hour talking about resource adequacy. I want to direct you to the blue box there, which has a link to a paper that we began a year ago. So we've done a real campaign this year around resource adequacy. We've used all public data. We update it quarterly. We engage with the investor-owned utilities, with the regulatory agencies, with academia, with the ISO, with subject matter experts. And we say to them, poke holes in our methodology. Tell us we're not wrong, because what we see is frightening heading out to 2026. So what you see on the graph is this is, again, public data, is you had this enormous drop from 2019 to 2020, 6 gigawatts of what we call capacity went off the grid here. And it's basically gas-fired power plants or cogeneration units. And we've never been able to replace them quickly enough. And so consequently, prices have risen. And we did a presentation to the board just last week where we have a new graph here where you see the prices going up as high as $14 per kilowatt month. So a real problem, something we all know about, but our campaign certainly led to everyone taking a very hard look at this, because our argument is we can't comply if there simply is no supply in the market. Other groups have started to do similar studies. Ascend Analytics, Gridwell Consulting. We are continuing to do more analysis in this area. But to the point about affordability, this then translates into higher costs for energy for all of our customers. So this is one of our big issues that we'll be continuing to address in 2024. And next slide, please. Last but not least, a little advertisement. We did hold our conference this past year in May in San Diego. We had over 600 people attended. It was fantastic. Great conversations, great topics. Elected officials, governing board members attended. And this year we are going north to San Jose. Those are the dates. And we welcome you to hold those dates in your calendar and to join us. And that's it for me. Happy to take any questions.
Veronica, any questions? Beth, thank you. This is a really good presentation and a great overview of the future in California. As you look ahead to next year's legislative sessions, what is it that you need most from us?
So I think one of the things that we're trying to do this year is with the growth, we've had some really great people join the CCAs and join our legislative committee. So we now have, it's a lot more organized. We're hiring another person into our LEG team. And one of the mapping exercises we're doing is trying to understand the connection you as governing and boards, elected officials have with your local electeds, where the relationships are, so that we can map those. Because honestly, when we get up there and we get into the legislative session, it's, we can do campaigns, sure, but what we tend to find is more effective is very targeted advocacy on very specific bills by specific authors and to work with the local folks. So, you know, now that we have many more CCAs in Southern California, I think that we have the ability to be, well, we saw it this past year, we have an ability to be much more effective. That's why I listed off the cities and counties where we have community choice aggregators. That translates right through to who is in the legislature. We're starting to see some former CCA governing board members are now in both the Senate and the Assembly. So it does, you know, that's our expertise. We don't run a PAC. We don't, you know, we have to be careful with public monies. So I think that to me is where your value really comes in. And then having David and other staff from your area participate in our staff committees is essential.
We are committed to not only our program here, but providing information to everyone in California so that they can make their own most intelligent choice. But it is incredibly important that we have a presence in the legislature and that we are taking those steps that ensure affordability for our customers and affordable reliability for our customers. So, David, is there anything you would like to add or ask?
Just that it's a pleasure working with Beth and the team at CalCCA. It's appointment sort of meetings for me, and I'm the policy wonk who reads all the CPUC proceedings and provides comments. So, Beth, it's once again an honor to work with you and the team.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We appreciate your input. I mean, you are the subject matter experts. You bring to us what's happening in your communities. And that's what is most important. So thank you for participating and for being a member of CalCCA.
Thank you. This was an information item and there is no need for us to vote on anything. So Beth, thank you. We will move on to item 7B, DCA's audit for fiscal year 2022-23. And then with that, Claude, please.
You have some brief prepared remarks to introduce our auditor on the call, Shannon. So, you know, I stand here before you today with great pleasure and pride to share the outcomes of fiscal year 22-23 of the financial statement audit conducted by Davis Farr LLP, and the auditor's opinion has been unmodified, affirming that DCE's basic financial statements are presented fairly in all material respects as of June 30th, 2023. So DCE would like to express gratitude to the Coachella Valley Association of Governments, there are staff members, and the audit firm, especially Shannon Ayala, who will hop on here in a second, for their diligence and hard work in ensuring the accuracy and transparency of DCE's financial reporting. And just a brief highlight here, and then I'll wrap up. DCE has successfully managed to temper cash flow variability and is delighted to announce that a key financial metric, the days of adjusted liquidity on hand at June 30th, were an impressive 126 days. And this places DCE in a superior position compared to Clean Power Alliance of California, which is the largest CCA, and they had 98 days of adjusted liquidity on hand. So this is really a remarkable achievement as DCE sets its sights on attaining an investment-grade credit rating in the coming months, and truly marks a momentous year for DCE, and we are confident that our continued commitment to financial stability, community investment, and environmental goals will pave the way for a brighter future. Thank you, ChatGPT.
Are there any questions?
And we have Shannon just to briefly give us her update.
Okay. Thank you, Claude. As Claude mentioned, I'm here to report on the audit for the fiscal year ending June 30, 2023. Let me just move on the slides. Okay. So we did complete the audit in September and issued the audit opinion dated October 20th, 2023. As Claude mentioned, that was an unmodified opinion, which is the highest level of opinion that can be received. It indicates that the financial statements and the footnotes are presented fairly and in all material respects and in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. We also issued the communication to those in governance letter, which sort of wraps up the audit, indicates any sensitive footnote disclosures or estimates in the financial statements, as well as any journal entries that we had, notes the significant risks that we noted during the audit. There were no journal entries. We also issued the government auditing standards opinion, which is also known as the internal control letter. That indicates that there were no significant deficiencies or material weaknesses. As I mentioned, this indicates there were no material journal entries. We actually didn't have any journal entries detected as a result of the audit procedure. So kudos to Claude and Janice and the rest of the staff at DCE, as they were very well prepared, had all of the journal entries and closing entries prepared prior to us starting the audit. And then again, we had no material weaknesses or significant deficiencies noted in internal control. In addition to our standard audit procedures of substantiating material balance sheet accounts and performing revenue and expense analyticals, comparisons of current year to prior year, we also identified a few areas of audit focus for revenues and receivables. There was a termination of an agreement this year, so we did review that to ensure that the termination payment was recognized in accordance with the termination. And then subscription-based IT arrangements. This is a new GASB 96 related to information technology agreements. We evaluated any agreements that DCE had to determine if they were if they qualified for reporting, and they did not have any that qualified for reporting. So thankfully there was no change or adjustment needed to the financial statements related to those. And then each year we're required to perform a test of unpredictability. This year, we selected a few contracts and agreements to review to ensure that payments were made in accordance with the contract and agreements. We selected five and we did not have any exceptions noted as a result of our procedures. And with that, I can answer any questions that you may have over the audit process or the results, as well as the financial statements.
I actually had a question on the revenues and receivables, but you just answered it. So thank you so much.
Sure.
It's hard to improve on an unmodified audit. So, Shannon, thank you very much. And to Claude and everyone in the team, this is exactly the result that we seek. And it's very pleasurable to sit here and have received it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
We will.
Motion to receive and file. Second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. There were no abstentions, no objections. Let's move on to item 7C, contract marketing and community engagement services. Emily?
Thank you. One little shorter than Claude. Okay. Hi. My name's Emily. Prior to the DCE's launch in April of 2020, we prepared an RFP for marketing and outreach services. Berkricks was selected as that contractor to prepare DCE's beautiful logo that you see everywhere. The website, pre-enrollment notices as required by the CPUC and other public awareness events. The current contract is set to expire next month, December 31st, and we have updated our needs since the initial launch. So there's some need for some website updates, some additional English Spanish translation, more video and photography, and more public outreach efforts. So some of the updated proposals included potentially expanding, hopefully, into the city of Palm Desert, and potentially, hopefully, some future program launches, such as battery storage incentives. So, like I said, current contract is set to expire at the end of December this year. So in September of 2023, we initiated an RFP process, and there were five proposals submitted. I know there was a question earlier about the interview panel. There were three people on the panel, two people from the Coachella Valley Association of Government staff, one person from the City of Palm Springs staff. Of the five proposals submitted, we reviewed and selected the top three contenders and hosted interviews on November 1st. And the evaluation committee unanimously supported having Berkricks start as of January 1st, 2024. So the recommendation is to approve the contract effective January 1st, 2024.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
My one question is typically on a multi-year contract. I'm used to seeing wording in here, and it might be in the agreement that it's contingent on budget approval. And if it's not, can we add it?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. Good question.
Vice Chair, if you just include that with the motion, we'll make sure that it's included before it's executed. Thank you.
And I do not have any questions. I've had the pleasure of working with Berkricks through the duration of this program, and they've been outstanding partners. With that, is there a motion?
The addition of the wording to the multi-year budget approval.
I second that motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Item 7C is approved.
We'll now move on to item 7D, cost-free nuclear energy generation allocations from SCE and from Pacific Gas and Electric. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Friedman.
Thank you, Chair Middleton. This agenda item concerns DC's ability to receive cost-free nuclear energy generation allocations from Southern California Edison and Pacific Gas and Electric. Now, when DC initially planned to launch in the summer of 2018, the board approved the energy product offerings and decided to exclude nuclear energy, and that was consistent with state policy at the time and the planned closure of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant by 2025. However, legislation passed last year that Beth Vaughn had mentioned just a short time ago contemplates the continued operation of Diablo Canyon for another 5 years to improve statewide energy system reliability and reduce greenhouse gas emissions while additional renewable energy and zero carbon resources come online. Now, under that legislation and the CPUC decision scheduled for approval this coming November 30th, DC customers will pay their pro rata share of the cost of Diablo Canyon extension, but can also receive their pro rata share of the GHG-free benefits from PG&E. Now, most importantly, DC customers will pay the Diablo Canyon extension period costs in the public purpose charge on their SE bills, whether DCE accepts the GHG-free benefits or not. If the various regulatory approvals for the Diablo Canyon extension are issued next year, the benefits could be available starting in 2025, and they would save DC customers about $440,000 per year in avoided procurement costs based on the current market prices for the alternative hydroelectric resources. Now, in the meantime, under a separate CPUC decision, each year Southern California Edison offers to the CCAs in its service area their pro rata share of its hydroelectric facilities, as well as nuclear generation from its interest in the Palo Verde nuclear plant in Arizona. Unlike what is expected for Diablo Canyon, DC is not charged for SE's GHG-free energy because our customers already pay for it, and whether DC accepts it or not, in the Power Cost Indifference Adjustment, or PCIA. This is the famous CPUC-approved exit fee that's charged to customers leaving the incumbent utility to join a CCA such as Desert Community Energy. Now, DC has always taken hydroelectric allocation each year from Edison, but not the nuclear allocation because of the board's 2018 decision. SE sent its term sheet for the 2024 allocations on November 3rd, and DC's response is due by December 4th. Electing the SCE nuclear allocation, in addition to hydro that we already allocate, would save DC customers about $330,000 per year, once again, in avoided procurement costs. So staff accordingly recommends that the board authorize the executive director to elect for DCE to receive its pro rata allocations of nuclear energy from SCE beginning with the 2024 allocation and from PG&E when Diablo Canyon GHG-free benefits are offered. That's in line with state policy and also at no additional cost to DCE. Now staff will continue to monitor state energy policy and return to the board for further direction on accepting nuclear allocations from SCE and PG&E as the state achieves its GHG reduction and grid stabilization goals. That concludes my staff report, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Are there any public comments on this issue? Okay. So I move approval. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any objections? Any abstentions? Item 7C is approved. 7E, excuse me. Or no, 7D. D is in David. Thank you. Guarantee of, we'll now move on to 7E as in Edward, guarantee of DCE's obligations to the Energy Authority. And again, back to Mr. Friedman.
Thank you again, Chair Middleton. This agenda item concerns a guarantee of DC's obligations to the Energy Authority, or T, DC's power procurement consultant. Since 2018, shortly after DC's formation, T has provided energy consulting services to DCE under its resource management or agreement, or RMA, with DCE. And for DC's short-term energy needs, T buys power on the open market and then sells it to DCE. Two of T's equity owners, who are East Coast-based public power agencies, have guaranteed DC's power purchase obligations, as DC doesn't yet have its own creditworthiness. DC pays T a $1 per megawatt hour credit solution fee for this guarantee. Now, in anticipation of the expiration of the RMA's term this coming January, T informed DCE that the two equity owners are withdrawing their guarantees effective this coming December 29th. DC has evaluated alternatives, such as expanding the existing revolving line of credit with Riverside Bank or obtaining other lines of credit. Staff has concluded that the most efficient and least cost option for replacing the T credit solution is for the City of Palm Springs to guarantee market purchases executed by T for the benefit of DC customers. Now, based on T's analysis of DC's market exposure, the City of Palm Springs guarantee would be for an amount not to exceed $25 million. This guarantee would be in addition to the guarantee the City provided last year related to DC's $13 million revolving line of credit with River City Bank for DC's working capital and collateral needs. Now, removing the current T credit solution of $1 per megawatt hour would save DC customers approximately $400,000 per year. DC staff met on November 8th with Chair Middleton and Palm Springs City Manager Scott Siles to discuss the guarantee concept and update them on DC's healthy financial position, as Mr. Kilgore just mentioned, and is reflected in the financial statements that are included in your agenda package. Staff now requests the board's direction to formally ask the City of Palm Springs to issue the guarantee of DC's power procurement obligation to the Energy Authority with a guarantee amount limited to $25 million. Now, based on board authorization to move ahead, City Council would consider the guarantee at its December 14th meeting. If Council approves the guarantee, DC staff will bring back to the board at its next meeting on January 8th the proposed amendments to the resource management agreement and related task order 2 that replace the credit solution provided by T's equity owners with the guarantee provided by the City of Palm Springs. And that concludes my staff report, and once again available for any questions.
David, thank you. And again, this is a matter that will go to the Palm Springs City Council for approval, for final approval. As I understand this agreement, the City of Palm Springs would be acting as a guarantee, or what we would not be expending any funds unless there was, in fact, a need to step in.
That is correct, Chair Middleton. That is correct, Chair Middleton. As you can see with our healthy financial reserves, DC has been timely paying all of its T obligations. Expect that to continue. This is a backstop guarantee for the energy market because they do expect that sort of guarantee.
Are there any questions?
As far as the guarantee goes, David, it says that T is removing their first priority lien, and I'm wondering, does the City of Palm Springs then have a first priority lien as well?
No, it's there's something called in the task order 2, there's a whole lockbox arrangement that Claude and his team are very familiar with, and that's part of the guarantee mechanism, so that would be removed, but the city would not have that. So that will actually facilitate cash management from Claude and his team, so that's another advantage of removing the T credit support solution.
And this may be a redundant question. How does it correlate with the line of credit with River City Bank?
They're not directly related. We did look, as I mentioned in the staff report, we did look at could we potentially expand, increase the amount of the line of credit for which the City of Palm Springs is already the guarantor. So any increase in the guarantee in the
line of credit would require an additional guarantee from the city. It's easier just to have a direct guarantee to T, and also that frees up the existing line of credit for other matters if there's a need for drawing on cash or for collateral needs, particularly with Edison. Beth mentioned the financial security requirement, so we do have to post to collateral, and the RCP line of credit is available for that posting with Edison required by the CPUC rules.
Thank you.
No other questions? I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any objections? Any abstentions? Item 7E is approved. Item 8 is an information item. Are there any questions on item 8? And we will move on to agenda item 9. Public comments on non-agenda items. I believe we do have a public commenter.
Could have sat there.
Hi again, Brad Anderson, City of Rancho Mirage. I just wanted to speak on this public participation in this meeting, which is good. But I'm concerned. I've stated this before, but, I've been around here since the beginning, believe it or not, of DCE. But I guess my public, I want to speak about public participation, meaning allowed speaking time per agenda item. Now, I noticed the chairperson mentioned that if there was any public comment on 7D, I believe. And I'm under the impression that we all had to do it at the beginning of the meeting, according to the agenda. So that's confusing, and I would like to see when the board considers an item to have the public participate at that time too. And not that I'm the boss, but I would like to see that, because that's best practices in the whole state of California. And this is the only city I know of, and CBay now, and the Vector Control District that does it this way, which really limits public participation when you only allow 3 minutes for all the entire items on the agenda. And again, most people like me were to take that amount of time anyway. And I'm concerned, I'll state this again, about the two board members, just having two board members. That's the recipe for disaster, I believe. We don't live in a dictatorial type of area. We should have more board members. I know it's set up to have 6-7 at the beginning. It should be this way, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments on non-agenda items?
Yes, Chair. We actually do have one from the virtual audience.
Thank you.
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
We can hear you. You have 2 minutes. Please proceed.
Okay, thank you. My public comment is that when you go on to the DCE board agenda meetings online, you can only see the agenda packets and the audio links. And so I've called CVAG to see who can upload the minutes. I know the minutes exist because when you click on agenda packets, you approve the minutes in the consent agenda. However, if you can make the minutes more accessible just directly on the actual website, that would help out a lot of the general public. And that's my whole comment. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
No, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And for item 10, announcements, the next DCE meeting will be held January 8th, 2024 at 3 p.m. in the large conference room at Palm Springs City Hall, 3200 East Chocolates Canyon Way, Palm Springs, 92262. With that, we are going to adjourn into closed session. So I'm going to have to ask everyone who is not legally entitled to be present with our consultation with our legal counsel to please exit the room and to exit the virtual meeting.
Ellie.
Good afternoon. The Desert Community Energy Board met in closed session to discuss the item listed on the meeting agenda, and no reportable action was taken. And with that, we are adjourning the meeting at 4:07 p.m. Thank you very much.